Thank you. Certainly my pleasure to be
here. Larry Smith, Associate Professor of Economics, on behalf of the Computer Science Club.
Thank you. Certainly my pleasure to be with you this afternoon. I have a soft spot in my head for the computer science students and their organization. Of course, if this had been called the Programmers Club, I would not have come. Thank you. Certainly, I appreciate the invitation. It's my pleasure to be here. Just to make passing reference to what's on the screen, I could not resist drawing your attention to the most current employment figures from Silicon Valley. Some of the occupations may be of no interest to you, but I presume the top one is. And it doesn't look overly, like, wonderful. Total employment in Silicon Valley remains below its peak. It's actually several hundred thousand below its peak. You can see that there's distress across the entire range of what we generally speaking call competing IT occupations. And of course, there's only one category that is increasing, the one called creative, innovative, and guess what I want to discuss with you this afternoon. I want to talk about the creation of software. You'll understand I don't even like the word software developers, because it sounds like all you're going to do is tweak. Enough with the tweaking, ladies and gentlemen. Let us create kick-ass, killer applications. And I mean that. I'm not joking, and I'm not trying to be, like, stupidly provocative. I want to talk about creating the kinds of programs that do really too well, three things potentially. One, that are commercially successful. Two, that change society, ideally for the better. And that can frequently be used in either the foundation of empire, commercial empire, or equally important, that it can rocket your career upwards. If you want to labor behind the acoustic barrier for most of your life, then I have nothing to say to you. If you believe in your heart of hearts that you are that your occupation is programmer, then I have absolutely nothing to say to you. But if you want to create software, and if you want to use the ability to create software to accelerate your career within a corporation, or of course to do something on your own, the destiny of your school awaits. Yet these are still early days. Nobody still quite refers to the legendary software creators at the Computer Science School at the University of Waterloo. But it is my plan that that should be the case eventually, if not quite today. And of course, you work everywhere. Your predecessors in this university work almost everywhere in North America. As some of you know, I watch them with very great care. So when I say they're working everywhere, I know that the skills you're taught here are state-of-the-art in any kind of basic global sense. Now, the question, of course, is, and this is the challenge to you this afternoon, are you going to make other people rich and other people powerful, and are you going to contribute to the reputation of other persons? Or are you finally going to stop be hired guns, have the courage to enter occupation number two, and use it to win fame and fortune? So that's what I want to talk about this afternoon. And I want to be as specific as I possibly can with respect to giving you as concrete guidance as I can. You will understand in a lousy hour I can't quite answer all your questions. There'll be opportunity for some questions and answers at the end of my remarks. But for goodness sakes, do understand that there will be a few things about empire building and disrupting society that we will leave for another day. Let's start with what is your biggest problem with respect to deciding to create these kinds of killer applications. What is the biggest reason that when you apply these sophisticated talents and all the efforts that your faculty members have gone into beating your brains into some degree of submission and inspiration, is in fact this terrible business that all you want to do is create software to help me talk? No more talking software. No more communication software. Will you stop? Been there, done that, had it, stop. And I know why you're doing it, ladies and gentlemen. That's the great obstacle. It is what you read about endlessly. It is the great stories you hear about. All these great communications come software entities. So you're either into software marketing, you're into advertising, you're into games, and communication. And then your inspiration fails you. And your inspiration fails you because you are relying on the information media, oh my God, what you could Google up, to give you a sense of what you should be doing in the marketplace, what you might do with your talent. Unfortunately, and this is what you've got to first get in your head, do you understand the information in your head is skewed? Skewed because all you find out about is what's discussed in the major media. And what you're learning about in the major media is skewed even more because what you're hearing about are publicly traded corporations. That is a small subset of all the corporations on this planet. It's a small subset of all the software creation which is going on, and therefore I'm at a bit of a loss to understand why you would plan your career based on such a tiny slice of information. I'm of course talking about the fact that you never hear about the great companies that I want to talk to you about this afternoon. Now I've actually, by leaning on people and persuading them and whining and begging a bit, I've got some of my associates, clients and spies to defer slightly with respect to their confidentiality. So I'm going to try to bring to you as much specific information as I can. Subjects, of course, do not interfere with the proprietary advantage of other people. You've got to start understanding, but some of the most amazing software is being created, has been created, including by the graduates of this university. They've succeeded in disrupting the marketplace. They've succeeded in making a lot of money. They've succeeded in changing society, and you've never heard about them. And except for me in my classroom, I hardly ever, how are you going to find out about them? Of course, you have to think to look for them because there are ways to find out about them. So I want to talk to you about the creation of killer applications. Of course, those of you who are alert have already wondered when it was worth coming. Because after all, an economist is going to tell you about creating killer software applications, or at least that's what the topic said it was, and like, how would I know? How would I know how you would create killer software? Because after all, I haven't done it. You haven't read about me doing it. You haven't read about me associated with a company doing it. So what credibility do I bring? Well, of course, I bring none. I bring none. So now how do we deal with this fact that I have no credibility? Because I cannot tell you that I've done it. Now the point, of course, is I have done it. What I said was, I can't tell you I've done it. There's a huge difference between I can't tell you I've done it and I haven't done it. So I'm stuck now in this dilemma. I don't know how to proceed. I could immodestly tell you I've done this and I've done that and done the other thing, but I'm a naturally modest person. I don't like doing that. But for goodness sakes, ladies and gentlemen, cut me a little slack, that's all I can say. Companies I've been associated with, my clients, associates, and of course, occasionally hovering over your shoulder while you do it, we've done these things, and I don't want to offer any observation to you this afternoon that has not been done by graduates of the University of Waterloo, and that do not meet the criteria that I'm talking about. And I want to give you these illustrations. I want to talk about what's been created already, what applications still await. I want to talk about it sort of generically in terms of the broad categories and try to give you specific examples. No, I'm not going to give you company names. So you could well sit back and think, I'm proposing now to lie for the next 50 minutes. To what purpose, ladies and gentlemen? I have lots of audiences. I don't need you. And lying just, you know, I mean, to what, you know, why would that give me any pleasure, satisfaction, or anything whatsoever? Torturing you on an exam, that gives me sadistic pleasure. Lying to you this afternoon, I can't imagine what you would imagine my motivation is. In any event, that's what I want to talk about. So let's discuss the great applications that can be created. First, stop talking, stop communicating. Well, at least stop creating communication tools. What you want to do is, of course, create a killer application, meaning someone wants it a lot. So the first thing you're going to do is make sure you create software for someone who wants it a lot, and therefore will, it's really complicated, pay you a lot. So let's look at the categories of how you can create things that people will want to pay you a lot for, because they really, really need it. Okay, so what can you do? What can you create software for? The problem that you know perfectly well what the problem is, a computer can do this enormous range of things, And in order to find something non-pedestrian and non-obvious, you got to use imagination. The creative, innovative thing. The thing that, you know, half your courses are about. Well, at least one of your courses is about. Well, at least one of the assignments in one of your courses is about. I'm sorry, that's not my problem. You got to practice this skill. So, let's start by figuring out how we apply these creative energies to creating this kind of software. Let's see. So, I'm just describe some companies. These are real companies that we've founded by or UW graduates. Okay. One of the best ways to disrupt the marketplace is by saying to someone, I can lower your costs dramatically. Not, I can help you talk more. I can make your data flow seamlessly to every corner of your organization and bury every single employee that you have in more information than he or she will ever read in a lifetime. And I will do that every day. Now, do you really believe that's even a rational approach? Now, what this company did, it was a different argument. They decided, of course, that they're focusing on something which is extremely important. So they focused on a piece of hardware, a piece of machinery. All right, an IT piece of machinery. What is an IT machinery, for goodness sakes, for example? Comes in a piece of machinery that needed to be designed. It is, after all, a simple process. It requires an entire flock of engineers to design this. It has to be done again and again, one of, it's extraordinarily expensive process. Time-consuming, tedious, oh, I forgot to say one other thing, and mission-critical. If one of those pointy-headed engineers gets anything wrong, you get a major crash, not a computer crash, a real-world crash of a vital function. And the clients, of course, don't like their entire service to simply come to a shrieking halt because there has been a design error made. And of course, on the other hand, they don't want to spend millions upon millions of dollars of doing design after design after design after design. So what are your jobs? What are your principal jobs? It's why you shouldn't tell this to other people. But I presume we're surrounded by computer scientists. Now, a few engineers might have sneaked in, but your job is to stick with workers. You have to understand that. It is your role in life to reduce the number of people working at any function. This is your plan. This is what you're trying to do. I don't care if you're nice people. It serves society for you to do this. So you've got these flock of highly expensive engineers doing this extremely tedious and extremely complicated and very tedious mission-critical function. I've just described a program to you. Well, I mean, even I understand that that's a piece of software. Now, of course, the pointy-headed engineers who were doing this design were not really quite so sure. Because, after all, they bring their seasoned judgment and understanding to this design function. Yeah, well, and the pointy-headed CSO said, we'll find the engineers. We will download their information. Much of it is, of course, mathematical. And as you know how... mathematics. Mathematics, rules, deduction, programs, rigid, rules, deduction, yes, no, up, down, big, small. I'm sorry, it's a slam dunk for you to think about. Of course, you'd have to know about this other industry. You'd have to know about this other application. You would actually have to know that this design function was being created. You would have had to actually find this out. You'd actually have to talk to someone, and we'll talk about how you would get this information in a few minutes. They discovered this was a huge obstacle. They created an off-the-shelf program and tweaked it. Oh, please, ladies and gentlemen, stop the tweaking stuff. They built this mother program from the first word up. They had to, because it's highly specialized. And then what did they do with it? It's an elaborate program that replaces dozens of engineers, runs at the price of a little electricity, and 20 CSs. All right, one or two mathematicians thrown in just for good measure. Oh, what faculty are you part of? Oh. It means you should be comfortable doing this. You should be comfortable doing mathematical computation. delivered in an aggressive computing environment. They did. It works wonderfully well. And what would you do if you're trying to rule the planet, or at least a particular chunk of it, and you've never heard of this company? I won't tell you their name because I can't. I'm sorry, I should say I may not. And even if I told you, you wouldn't recognize it, and that's the point. Running under your radar scarf are all of these lovely businesses, changing your world, creating your world, making multi-millionaires out of the people doing it, and you don't hear about it, so let me tell you. So they did it. Now the point, of course, is they were smart. They understand that if you really, really create killer applications, this is an important point. You don't sell the application. Why would you? Why would you sell the application? You're the only one with the application. You're the only one who can design this so cheaply. And why sell the software? You sell the service of the software. Again and again and again and again. And then it even gets better. Because every time you iterate, and every time you make the software chunk out one more of these one-off designs, you'll learn something. And if anybody was trying to duplicate you, get into your monopolistic turf. How dare somebody else make the same thing I'm doing? Which is why I, of course, can't quite describe this. Some of you are impressed with Mr. Gates. Oh, I'm trying to think of it. Some of you are impressed with Mr. Gates. There's a lot to be impressed about. But he is so rich. Because the quality of what... he is so rich. Because of the talent of forethought, he has created a monopoly. And a conviction of offenses in the pursuit of his monopoly. But the best monopoly is this kind of monopoly that I'm talking about, where it's built on the pure expertise, and every time it's iterated, it gets better. And the only problem is, if you are going to duplicate what that company's done, you would now have to have done this 50 times already with these major corporations, which of course give you feedback. So every time you do it with such excellence, then the client says, you know, I think I'd like you to add this little feature. And you break your little mathematical heads and your little computational heads, and you find a way to do it. And then the client gets even happier, even more wed upon your indispensability. And of course, it's always helpful if you sell stuff to rich people. Don't sell stuff to poor people. If you make $1 billion, then give it away to people. If you have a social orientation, well, satisfy it. But if you're trying to make commercially attractive software, you sell it to rich people. So this particular company sells it to global corporations. Global corporations, who net tens of billions of dollars in revenue. This is mission critical to them, for this company. It charges millions. To clients? For whom it's almost a rounding error. But now, wait, I said, you're trying to save money. Well, even if it's a rounding error, they want to save money. But once they save a lot of money, once they save millions, I think you're trying to squeeze the last 3-4 million out of you. You've bled almost $20 million of unnecessary expense from them. So all you say is, I just like 3 of it. Every time I do this. Of course, you don't sell the software. Some of the sweetest operations create one piece of software. And they propose, through evolving it, to feed off it for at least their lifetime. So in a few cases, they may actually try to let their grandchildren feed off this piece of software. Of course, this is the cool part. You never patent it. Why would you? Nobody else knows about it except you. Unless, of course, you get a patent. It tells the damn world about it. No NPP lawyers are going to chase and bleed you dry. Even if they found you, it doesn't matter. Those are sweet offers, and there's an enormous number of them, ladies and gentlemen. So the first thing I want to tell you is killer applications. Such a killer, you never sell it. Such a killer, it's better not to sell it. Such a killer, there's only one of it, and it's yours. because it's mission critical, companies will pay you big bucks. Within the whole area of design, so that's one example using the design. I want to give you other examples of other kinds of applications. In the whole area of design, let's see, on our planet, how many things need to be designed? Oh, I don't know, 2 billion. Now, they're all not mission critical. A computerized process to design toasters, I suppose you might be able to sell. Why you would wish to create it, God only knows. So what you're trying to do is of all the things being designed on this planet, you'll look for the ones that are mission critical, that are both expensive, and if they fail, they cause catastrophic failure. Now, how would you find out about these? Let's see. How would you find out about critical pieces of technology that require design that you could just computerize the design process and leave all the human designers in the dust? How would you find out about this? How would you find out all this complex commercial intelligence? How would you find out about technologies? Which ones are mission critical? How would you find this out? How would you find out if there were already suppliers? Because in some of these design applications, there's already a supplier. How would you find out? You students at the University of Waterloo with 11,000 of you in cooperative education. What the hell are you doing but not talking to your classmates? Do you want to know what Intel is doing? Do you want to know what Boeing is using? Do you want to know? You can find it out. Why are you not talking to people? I know you're in computer science, but you can train yourself. You can train yourself to talk to people. I'm not joking, ladies and gentlemen. How can I find out about these things? Well, for goodness sakes, some of you tell me, but this is the slightly scary part. Most of the people telling me aren't enrolled in the School of Computer Science. Now, what does that tell me? Tells me that I need to accept these invitations. Do I say, what the hell are you waiting for? Why are you? Oh, I know. You just want someone to give you the technical specs. Oh, it's called program/technician. It's called Conestoga College, which has an excellent, which does have an excellent program. But if you think I'm paying you big bucks after I killed myself to do the technical specifications, well, that's the point. You do the technical specifications, you do the research, and you execute it. Well, you find your own problems. Solve your own problems. What is caught into in this one? How did you just wait for me to come to you with a big problem on a silver platter? I give you commercially valuable information, and I say, why don't you make $100 million of it? No way. I'm going to pay you Code Monkey wages if I have to do all the technical specifications. There is no way you're anything other than a hired gun. Which is what a lot of you are already doing. What a lot of you propose to do. Oh, they're going to pay me a lot of money. Well, think a moment. They may. But for how long? Anyway, quietly, secretly, behind the scenes, under the radar, some of your classmates. And what should scare the hell out of you? Students from other faculties are building your companies and hiring you. I guess it's okay that they hire you. But they're the ones shaping the technology. I thought if you wanted to, were a computer scientist, which is after all what your degree says, I would have thought you wanted to shape the evolution of computing, not just execute someone else's dream. Okay, that example I gave you came from engineering. Was an engineer who saw the opportunity. Oh, perfect. I will put out of work half my class if I... That's a good thing to do. If you don't know why that's a good thing to do, then you need a class in economics to understand why putting other people out of work is a good plan. But it was an engineer who saw the opportunity, an engineer who was exposed to it, an engineer who was computer literate enough to say, aha, this can be computerized, and I'm going to do it, and I'll hire the talent I need. Now, he hired high talent, and by the way, it's not easy to do. You could not do this design thing on some weekend. I know. Your business plan calls you for you to create a killer application over what? Well, get the killer idea on a weekend, execute it by the end of the month, raise the finances by the end of the term, and IPO by Christmas. You're in fantasy land, ladies and gentlemen. You're in fantasy land. When you get through your head a simple comment, if it's too easy, it's hard to make it a business opportunity. It's hard to make it killer. Oh, it's a killer application. Any fool could have created it in secondary school. But I'm as good a fool as the ones in secondary school, and I finally got to it. Come on, ladies and gentlemen. How could that conceivably sound to you like a coherent strategy to do anything? But give me another example. Different kind of function. This is the search one. Now, you're already sitting there thinking, how can there be a search? Oh, going against Google. Oh, maybe it's Yahoo he's going to talk about. No, ladies and gentlemen. You're not on the right page. Searching for information is a big deal. You should try it sometime. I'm not being sarcastic about that. Well, maybe a little bit, but I'm trying to also make a point that I will discuss in a minute, because I want to also discuss with you sources of where you can find some of this critical information. But first, I want to just catch some of the examples. Now, this is even more outrageous. You should find this offensive. This search software was created, well, not exactly, physically created. It was orchestrated, is owned, and is deployed by a graduate, I know you'll be shocked, of the Faculty of Arts. Yes, you see. Oh, you giggle at that poor artsy. I'm sorry, when they start writing checks for you, and when they drive up in their Porsche while you're trying to get into your little Honda Civic, then don't bitch at me about the circumstances. Because you see, what artsies do is they use information. They read, for example, which is a prerequisite. Well, don't look at me. It is a prerequisite. They read. And when they read, they discover that they can't find some of the things they need. So, the artsy observes that there's that critical lack of a certain kind of information. A very specific, highly concentrated form of information. And it's so critically important to clients that they will pay for it huge big bucks, gigantic bucks, because right now it is so primitive. They pay people with PhDs to go search for it. Do you want a PhD? Even an artsy PhD charges a hell of a lot of money. And yes, I know you find that staggering beyond belief, but even the artsy PhDs get paid a lot. Now you've got to deploy, and actually you've got to deploy a whole little flock of them to find this critical piece of information. And this is not scholarly research. This is a commercial organization that is looking for very precise information, because if it finds what it's looking for, it can make tens of millions of dollars. So yes, it will pay PhDs to do this. My university's artsy graduate thought, oh goodness, how primitive this all is. And then the cool thing, for those of you who gag in putting people out of work, let's see. The commercial company's trying to find the strategically important information. Oh, and they had to do it again and again and again. It was always a unique order, a unique requirement that they kept repeating. Let's see. Do something complicated that is a one of, but that must be repeated as one ofs, so can't be cranked out by idiots. Unless it's a stunning piece of software. Who was doing it at the time? Well, let's see. A whole flock of PhDs are doing it. Let's see. Where would you, if you were a commercial company, find flocks of PhDs who would do a little moonlighting? I don't know. At the university, that's where you'd find them. Yes, you'd find them. And it was driving the company crazy, observed the arts graduate, concerning the faculty members. Well, obviously not of this institution, but of other institutions, who exhibited the classic professor mistakes. That is to say, professors run on university time, and it's no semblance of anything called commercial time. It's not even clearly real time. The real world does not care about grade submission dates and Septembers and sabbaticals and all that good stuff. So professors were doing it, but they were doing it rather poorly. Rather awkwardly, rather slowly, rather, this is a good deal, yes, send me the check in advance, and I'm sure we'll have it for you in 3 months, maybe 6 months. Oh, I have a student crisis by Christmas. Oh, I have my sabbatical starting, we'll get, I'm not joking about that, ladies and gentlemen. That's the weakness. The search tool was expensive, awkward, and poor quality, and the artsy thought, yes, I will put professors out of work. The thought, the key. Beavering away could actually take faculty members, and if not exactly get them fired as a faculty member, it would take their discretionary income away from them. Ha ha. He was like so tickled pink. Now, of course, he's never had benefit of your education. What to do, what to do, said the artsy. Higher cost, of course! He hired you! He didn't even hire you over a graduate! Because the truth is, part of it was not that complicated to do. At least from his perspective. So he could give you very specific instructions, and he was careful that he got someone proficient. But this beautiful stuff, it had worked away. Now, some of it was quite elaborate, and some of you expect, because you're, you know, at the University of Waterloo, to be expected to be paid even on your co-op terms, like, you know, something approaching more than car fare. He discovered that, and of course had a big chunk of it done. All right, no, you want me to say India. No, he didn't have it done in India. Had it done in Malaysia. Where the rates are even cheaper. Now, and that wasn't good enough. This is what's called finesse, ladies and gentlemen. So he creates a search tool for the very specific requirements of what are going to be his clients. By the way, these are all large commercial clients. Of course, you see, you'd recognize the names of the clients. Nothing to tell you that either. Wouldn't recognize its company name, but you'd recognize the name of these clients because they are, again, some of the big boys in Canada, North America, and the world. And they want this search solution again and again and again. So they're going to get it from him. He creates this customized software, flirted with the thought of, well, maybe we should just sell the software, maybe to the client, or don't worry, ladies and gentlemen, he only thought about it for 1 hour. And I thought, I'm losing my mind. No. When I'm talking to the client, I will say, here's a piece of work that normally takes 25 PhDs half a year to do. It only takes us slightly less to do it. Gives the same money you give to all these PhDs. And the client does. Oh, by the way, it's a better quality product. It's more consistent. It's delivered on time. It is more reliable. And then, if he just wanted another perfect finesse. Now, he's got a piece of software that works so well, it's search. It's not a Google knockoff. It's search created for the specifics of the situation. When you get into your mind that what you're trying to do is make one piece of software for a limited set of applications, will you stop trying to make a piece of software for everyone on the planet? I know, $1 billion times 10 would be so cool. 1,000 times 100,000 is also a pretty damn decent number, especially if it's you and 17 other people doing it, don't you think? The economics are so wonderful. In any event, he now has a piece of software that produces this highly specific search function for a highly specific purpose, for a highly specific industry. And then he discovered, to his amazement, that laying around the world were records unsearched. They were unsearched because the PhDs hadn't gotten around to it, and because it was so insanely expensive. The records were just sitting there. Yeah. Do you know the commercial sense or not? Do you get our instinct or not? Let's see. Masses of records that are not being used because it's too expensive to use them, but now using my software we could use them. Clients are coming to me to get the search solution. But most of the databases are not valued very much. Because there's nothing you can do with them. Well, I don't know how that all invites any business. Buy the databases! Are you listening? Buy the databases! Because now you know something nobody else does. You know that this information that is almost free, not quite free, but almost free, at a negligible cost. Nobody really wants it. Most people don't even want to maintain it because it's expensive. Now, you found a way to do it, to make it extremely useful. This is like bumbling over a piece of real estate that's half a swamp. And you know where the plug is to drain it. You don't tell the person who owns the swamp, boy, you could triple your money with this swamp. Should we do it? You don't have these? No! You buy the damn swamp, drain it yourself, and now, how much sweeter deal. If Mr. Gates knew about it, he doesn't. But if Mr. Gates knew, he'd lust after a monopoly this smart. Because, of course, he's bought all the data up. So now, these records that he searches, hey, have the only software tool that works very efficiently, that can't Google it. And he controls the proprietary database. And I mean controls. I mean he physically has them. No way you're going, I know. Larry will make a mistake and say what it is, and I'll hack in tonight, and it'll be okay. No, he's smarter than that. We've got databases which are physically contained. You really don't think you put this online, do you, ladies and gentlemen? Are you nuts or whatever? You see, he may be an artsy, but he knows what you are capable of when you're having your less responsible moment from the point of view of human society. Yeah, so look at me like, oh yes, that was all this who me look on your face. You hacker geek nerds, you. Understand, I like that you're hacker geek nerds. Why don't you actually simply do something with your geekdom rather than taking instructions from Artsy? In any event, he's happy to give you instructions. The software continues to be evolved. Do you understand? I'm not sure you do. You're part of the IT industry. Don't you understand that finding the right piece of information is often just one piece of information can be worth millions of dollars. One piece of information, one scrap of a piece of information. Search is a big deal. Search is a powerful function. Google's got you map search. Let them map search all they want. Move on, ladies and gentlemen. You do what Google can't and never will do. Highly specific searches, highly customized search functions. No, you can't just use build search tool. Don't you get it? You'll have to build software. Create it. Oh, don't look at me like you want me to tell you how to use Windows XP 32 Vista to build your empire. Ain't gonna happen, ladies and gentlemen. Ain't going to happen at all. So, simple argument, is it not? So, design of all kinds. Search for stuff that people really have to have and will pay big bucks for. Too bad there's no... Excuse me. This is just the beginning of a set of things. Another example. Should be applicable to those of you sitting in the Faculty of Mathematics, which will be basically all of you, but unless you're an engineer who sneaked in. And even engineers both understand mathematics, sort. Now, you look in the world for things that computing can do better. One of the things you're looking for is to do something with a computer that cannot be done with a human agent even approximately usefully, not even approximately efficiently. So, of course, what do computers do? Well, they can do math. Simple math. Oh, yes. Quick and tax is so exciting. Counting and subtracting and adding and doing income tax. Find some and dive would you move on. Why don't you deal with heavy duty, powerful, rigorous mathematics? So, another client. This one is just rolling up. Sweetest deal imaginable. That should just shrieked your strength. You were nestled in the Faculty of Mathematics for a reason, and from my perspective, for quite a good reason. While you bitch and whine about the math and the requirements of your degrees, if you paid attention to the math requirements of your degrees, you could build an empire. So, this particular person, who is a graduate of Connery, knows this much about mathematics. It is easy for it to be misused. It is easy to take a mathematical technique, a mathematical approach,
and use it in the wrong place. How? Why would somebody misuse mathematics? Well, let's excuse the executive that's going to jail at Enron. Why would, like, responsible people misapply a piece of mathematics? It's really complicated. This is what you're looking for. You're looking to fix things going wrong. Things that go wrong and cause horrific consequences. How dare anyone misuse mathematics? Why would they be misusing it? It's very complicated reason. Because they don't know what to do. They're not mathematicians. They have failed calculus. Some of you have done that too, so you know a problem that would be with respect to applying things. I'm not being funny, ladies and gentlemen. Why would you assume, because you're looking for opportunities, and then blissfully assume every world is smarter than you. If you make that assumption, then that's true, but you've made it by your assumption, not by any reality of it. People are misusing mathematics all the time because they have a shady command of it. It requires rigorous thought. So look for a piece of mathematics misused. They're all over the place. Ask an economist, for God's sake. There's statistical bogus work out there. So, the commerce student, discovered a particularly grotesque misuse of mathematics in, as it turns out, a kind of obscure industry. And wasn't sure if there was any money to be made from it. Because who knows whether, the financial industry and the stockbrokers and the banks and the insurance companies could actually afford to. Are you nuts, ladies and gentlemen? As soon as he discovered misapplied mathematics in the financial industry, which is only mathematics, don't you think that he got rather salivating with the loopiness of it all? He's thinking, wait a moment. His first reaction, honestly was, I must be mistaken. I must actually misunderstand what's going on. So when I see something that's a misapplied piece of mathematics, I must not either quite understand what they're doing, and I'm assuming it's misapplied. Yeah, well, of course. Because if it was misapplied, someone besides me would have noticed. Purge that stupid idea out of your head. If you cannot actually ever get into your mind this thought, you found a mistake and you're the first person to do it. Unless you can do that, you're never going to do anything significant. Relegate yourself to being code monkeys, that's all you ever will be. Until the CSR automates you as well. You've got to be able to recognize the fact that you could have come to a problem first. Now the commerce student doesn't run amok. He does assume that there should be some mathematical ability in the finance industry, and is renowned for its sober, serious, careful, reflective decisions about everything. What finance industry? I don't know what one you know about, but that's not the one that anybody on this planet knows about. So, look carefully. You wanted to check the math. You wanted to really make sure that what he thought was misapplied was misapplied, because it looked so misapplied that even a commerce student understood it was misapplied. So, maybe I'm missing something. So, how to confirm it? Well, first make sure that you know exactly what the finance industry is doing. That was very complicated. 11,000 co-op students at the University of Waterloo working for every major financial institution in North America. Gee, it was hard to find out. Check the math. Well, no, he's not a math. He's not a math major. He said, routine business math. Basically stats. It's so complicated. He talked to a professor of mathematics. Of course, he didn't tell the professor of mathematics why he was asking. Professor of mathematics didn't really need to know. So he just said to Professor Mathematics, considering this kind of problem, would these mathematical principles apply or not? It was so wonderful. The math prof gave him a little lecture about stupidity. So the math prof thought he was trying to get some help on an assignment and was so stupid he didn't know what all of what he was doing. So this professor downloaded, something like 30 years worth of mathematical experience. And they're shouting at this poor little commerce student. who wished he'd wired himself so he could have recorded every single word the guy was telling him. Confirmed absolutely that it was misapplied. Went to the financial industry and said, excuse me, you're misusing this map. Let me fix it. No. All this mathematical computation is, of course, done in software. With software, obviously. And some heavy-duty software can tell if it's computationally intense. So, create a piece of computationally intense software, unique again, that properly applies the right mathematical principle to this particular problem set. And then go to the financial institution, this is where it's very complicated, and says, well, here is a piece of software to stop you from stupidly doing what any university student properly instructed by a professor would never do. No! Said, here is a piece of software that runs with an amazingly sophisticated, interactive, recursive set of equations. Woo, 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 enough mathy babble to sink a ship. And says, would you like to use it? Because it'll work 10 times better than what you're using. And he's not scamming them. He's not scamming them. By the way, scams don't work very long if you wish to really build an empire. And you know what? It was amazing. It worked 10 times better. Why was it working 10 times better? Because what they were comparing it against was stupid. It was so bad. It was like mathematically impossible to work. They didn't quite notice it was mathematically impossible to work. They just thought it was really, really, really hard and someone would have to get a Nobel laureate in mathematics to fix it, when all someone had to do was turn to the right chapter in the right textbook that says, don't use this for the wrong problem, delivers it to the people that now needed actually to have a piece of software created for it. I mean, that much is the case. This is not something you bang out on a calculator. So it needed a piece of specialized software created for it. And no, a piece of software that did this computation designed for this problem. There was computational software out there, but it was like generic. Computational software, look, don't you understand? They don't give non-mathematical idiots computational software. They will not know what they're doing with it. Why would you do that? No, no. You give them a piece of computational software designed exactly for their problem. They input the data. And out of the black box comes this amazing answer. This is always correct. Being as how mathematics is deductive logic, and if you would apply it to the right phenomenon, it will work. Of course, they're not going to sell the software. They rent the software. Where does the software reside? On their servers. Not going to let some client have the software have some pointy-headed CSer rummaging about where he or she does not belong. No, 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 no. Besides, clients don't want it anyway. They hate their IT department. IT department's big, huge black hole of cost. IT sucks from their point of view. They hire you unwillingly and are trying to outsource you at the first opportunity. Either outsource you to IBM, outsource you to Accenture, outsource you to India, and we get rid of you. There's security of employment, isn't there? Oh, yes. Let me be an outsourceable thing. In this case, of course, it's just not going to happen. The company downloads the information. The company doesn't want the software, doesn't want the machine. They maintain it themselves. They have absolute control of it. They keep improving it. They keep refining it. Man, the sweetest thing of all is that it's occurred to them, whoa, we've done this, like, once. We found one piece of mathematically misapplied information in the financial industry. Could there be? There are two! I'm physically giggling and giggling all the way to the bank. Literally and figuratively. Those are sweet deals, ladies and gentlemen. And what I'm describing to you is the future of software. Those are the kinds of applications that are killer applications. Things designed to deliver a solution to a problem created uniquely for the client. How many unique search problems are there on the planet that are un-Googleable? I don't know, 100 million. I lost track when I got to 100 million and stopped counting. Now again, not all of them are mission critical, and you would look for the mission critical ones, and I want to spend a few minutes talking about how you would do so. Design. Search. Stupid mathematics. Two huge, and that's the only two. Robotics. Huge other area. Without a lack of attention. With an insufficient amount of attention, for example. And some of you confused. You're waiting for the engineers to do something. They're waiting for you to do something. The RC sitting there thinking, you know what? I'll tell an engineer to talk to a CSer. Then I'll give both of them the specifications. Well, fine. Or you'll figure out what robotic applications are ready to roll today. And someone's making a mistake about the nature of the application. This applied math, searching for information, delivering design, and last and certainly not least, giving answers. Solutions. Not data! Don't give me data! I don't have to think about data. Give me an answer to something. Give me an answer. Give me an answer. Pick up and give somebody an answer. Sage is telling you something, ladies and gentlemen, that I'm right. It's so stupidly simple. Give people answers. Give them direct answers. Don't give them half answers. Give them an answer. This is sometimes more than just searching. Sometimes it's just give them a piece of information. If it's critically important, that's all you may need. But in many cases, it's just give them a decision. One more example. What do people really like decisions about that they will pay a lot of money for? It's so complicated. It's this. You say to any big commercial company that's not going broke, here, right here, precisely here, is a market you don't know about. The first reaction is, good, isn't it? Then you say, I can't prove. And then we'll try to adopt it. Not being joking. Now you're looking at me like, oh, that's not a cool thing. Oh, I see. How would you find market? How would you find market? How would you... Oh, I don't know, ladies and gentlemen. I think this is you creating a search tool using a unique database to find a specialized market. Oh, I know, I know. You're going to do data mining. Everyone's done there. It only works a little bit. Data mining. You've heard, don't look at me like you haven't heard of data mining. Everyone data mine. Credit card companies, data mine. Everyone data mine. Data mine, data mine, data mine. Except if you talk to a mathematician. Talk to mathematicians about data mining. Talk to mathematicians anywhere. Talk to statisticians anywhere about data mining. And often they giggle. Where are you going to find leads to these kinds of marketplaces? I don't know. You're at a university. And all your faculty members do is think. All right, not every minute, but they think. Why don't you actually stop whining about your tuition and download the information which is available to you? So then, you talk to people who are mathematicians about data mining. They will say, of course, what a high school math teacher should have told you in any introduction to stats. If you churn the data enough, you'll find something. And if you churn it enough, you'll find something in which you could not rely at all with respect to it having any, causal effect. So look at all the great, mighty data mining programs. Many of them just churn, looking for relationships. You want to find the weakness? So simple. As another client discovered. So the company using big data mining trying to find new markets and new opportunities. Entrepreneur thinks, oh, I'm probably screwing up the math anyway, especially if they're using off-the-shelf, and they were using off-the-shelf mining software. Because after all, any industry is like any other industry. Well, any economist will giggle at that ridiculous assumption. So they were using a generic and expensive data mining software to mine through their kind of stuff, getting they thought answers. So then, client looks at this and says, okay, so you developed a new marketing approach to kind of market here. Yes. The software said there was customers waiting. Okay? What customers? So describe the characteristics. I can't describe the characteristics because I'll be describing the company. Describe the characteristics of the new customers, the unsatisfied customers. And then said entrepreneur asked the key question. Why would they be good customers for your service? Like you just said, here are a whole bunch of new customers. We're going to sell them. And so why are they good customers? It's a simple question. Why? Why? And then the entrepreneur nearly had a, you know, those gotcha moments when you're in a conversation and you have to tell yourself, be calm, don't laugh in someone's face, don't embarrass somebody else. Money is falling from heaven and it hits you on the head, but keep your wits about you. Said the client, by the way, all these clients, you've recognized their name. Client said, with respect to why would these be good customers, upon which they were going to spend millions of dollars of new advertising. You know what they, you know what he said. You know why the other guy giggled almost. The software found. Okay, the software found. I'm glad the software found. But what back to the, why are they such good customers? Why? And what's the causal connection? Why do blonde, left-handed people in Minnesota pining away for your product? I'm not, well, I'm being sarcastic about those characteristics, but it was almost that bad. And it was quite clear that there was no answer. They were going to spend millions of dollars on speculation because the math said these customers were unused. I mean, it's beyond cuckoo. An enormous lack of understanding of mathematics and anything about its implications. So he said, aha, it will be complicated to create a better product here. All I need to do when I find a market is to explain why. I shall say, your customers are here because, and give logical reasons, and the words mathematics, regression, correlation, none of those strange mystical words which is supposed to make you abdicate your thinking process altogether. I will explain it in plain words. These customers overlook because they are prime customers because and your present product says they are. That's what he's doing. And it's quite amazing. If you tell someone who's about to spend millions of dollars in advertising with Google why these are prime customers, you know what? They like the why. And finding customers, just finding an answer to that problem, which of course you do in your system, finding an answer to that problem. But you know why someone will pay a lot? Huh? Because you'll sell it to the predominant company in the industry or to a big one who's stuck in second place, whose profit margins are being squeezed by the dominant player. And they still happen to have 10,000 employees and can easily pay you a couple of million dollars without noticing it. Literally, ladies and gentlemen. Literally. Because they have an urgent need. Because they're looking for a competitive edge. And you give them a competitive edge. Now come on, ladies and gentlemen, from all of those avenues of inquiry, I think to you seriously, every person sitting in this room could find a different application. So that's like, well, what's with this competing against each other? Look, dude, if I let you have your monopoly, can I have my monopoly? If we both try to take it in each other's turf, all we'll do is, you know, lower the price to the customer and give them choice. So why don't you stay in your monopoly and I won't mess with you? And I'll stay in my monopoly and you can mess with me. But that is, there are so many unsatisfied opportunities that why you all try to dig for opportunity in the same place escapes me. You know, here, there's a little patch of ground called advertising. You stand there on top of each other, digging away looking for gold. That's right, God, you could hit yourselves on each other on the head with a shovel, you're digging away to no purpose whatsoever. So move on and look for the real opportunities where other people are not operating. I'd like to spend a few moments also describing how you get this information, how you find these opportunities. Because just sitting staring at the ceiling isn't how you find them. It isn't having a brainstorming session with your housemates on the weekend, lubricated by your favorite refreshment. I'm sorry. Look, I'm glad you have friends and you should party and that's all wonderful stuff. And occasionally your friends might actually say something useful to you. But that is not how you will dependently find killer applications. I want to talk about the various sources and then we can do questions. First, one of the easiest things to do, and everyone in this room who cares to create killer applications should be doing it. Oh, by the way, I should make one other caveat. Killer applications are almost always sold to businesses. Individuals have squishy taste. Businesses lust for profit. Much easier marketplace. Now, so if you want to understand where the applications, where the opportunities are, there are two things you should read every issue. You should read them. Yes, you can get online versions. If you now are allergic to touching paper and getting like ink stains, that's so like awkward, fine. Get the online subscription. There is such a thing. But I'd have to pay for it. Yes, you would. Now, you can get access, so long as you're paying to your tuition here, you can get access to it, to historical records. For the cost of your tuition through Factiva or through LexisNexis. But basically when you leave, you are going to have to read every issue of two principal publications. The Journal of Higher Mathematical Computational Software Integrated No, for God's sake! I presume you're smart enough to find expertise in your own discipline. You're looking, well, God, if anybody wrote that down, give me a break. Hell! The two publications are every issue, Fortune Magazine. Listen, don't you ask me one more time and tell me you want to build an empire. And I say, what did you read in Fortune recently? And you say, duh. And I say, make up your mind. Do you want to be an empire? You want to be Mr. Gates? Well, then read Mr. Gates' magazine. But it's thick and heavy. I don't care if it's thick and heavy. Fortune, by the way, still has ads in it. Unlike Time Magazine, which now comes on four pages with one ad. As it tries not to bleed to death. Fortune still has ads. Why does Fortune still have ads? Because old rich white men read the damn thing. And last time I looked, old rich white men still rule North America. And America in particular. Now we have music. All too appropriate. I mean, seriously, if you want to understand where great opportunity resides, then read the stuff rich people read. What do rich people like to read about? It's so complicated, getting richer. Okay. Well, you can laugh about it, which is why there's still ads in Fortune. So, some of you with ambition, pray God. Some of you imagine you might want to start a business. Some of you certainly, I mean, why would you be here if you didn't really think you would like to create some cool killer application? Well, for goodness sakes, and if you want to be rich, some of you tell me you do, fine, I have no objection to being rich. Being rich is nice. But then pay attention to what rich people think if you want to be one of them. The other thing you should always read is Business Week magazine. Fortune's every 2 weeks, Business Week's every week. Every issue. Now, if you find something intriguing in the current issue, Factiva lets you go backwards and find out. Otherwise, if you are working, you will make sure you get access to Factiva and have your employer pay for it for you. I give you no pretext. Tell the employer it has to do with computing, and the IT department needs it if you've been trapped in IT. Otherwise, get it, or pay for the subscription yourself. I know that offends your soul right to your bootstraps, that you have to pay for something online while you wish to build a commercial empire online. But never mind, let's just leave aside that little moral contradiction. It's also a logical one. Hey, because what you don't understand is what these publications do. You think they tell just stories about rich people, and they certainly do. But they also talk about trends. They talk about the problems of the business world. Oh, so hard to find a mission-critical piece of software application. Meaning, you've got to find that mission-critical problem. What would you find about mission-critical problems for the business world? I don't know. How about in the business publication? What do you think? That's how they get readers. You read our magazine, otherwise something bad will happen to you. That's what the magazines say. And they work hard. They also suggest opportunities. Now, just to give you a flavor, I grabbed it because it is, in fact, particularly relevant. I simply pulled this, out of, this is Business Week, January 23, 2006. Just give you a flavor for what a nasty business publication does. If you don't like nasty business publications, then what the hell are you actually considering? Why are you here? Because you knew I was going to talk about money and empire and stuff. It says, math will rock your world. Doesn't say math, sir. Doesn't say it math. It says math there, sort of stupid, you know, cutesy math. But it says math. Math will rock your world. And this is actually. Now, for those of you mathematically adept, you're not going to read any math in here. God forbid. But what you're reading is about the use of mathematics. Math, computing, computation, fast, reliable, quick, business, math, application, problems. Like, how complicated is this? Like, this whole thing is like, yeah, you need to know more than this. But within this thing are like, leads, possibilities, shifting, kicking, reading, subtext. A generation ago, quants, that's quantitative analysts, quants turned finance upside down. Now they're meeting the quants. Is that like you? Or is that like the Matthews? Or you plus the Matthews? Because quantitative analysis can't be done without your machinery. So Matthews pays you to guard the machinery while they take all the money and all the reward? By the way, there was almost no reference to computer science in this article. And it was about math. Quant, now, they're mapping out ad campaigns. You don't mean they're actually saying where the ads will be placed, but it's not about, no. It's saying better ads suck, never use them again. That's what the quants do. And building new businesses from mountains of personal data. Is that what it says? Mountains of personal data. And then, of course, it goes on to talk about a variety of applications. Now, the benefit here is not that you would find out, not that there's enough information in there to build a business empire or find a killer app. But there's frequently enough information in there to make you wonder where to look, to make you wonder what second step you do. So, use current publications like that just as a sort of running brief on what the business world thinks is a problem or thinks is a hot opportunity. You find those leads in publications like that, and then you do some searching online, including the proprietary databases like Factiva, for which you have paid for. Now you want to understand some principle of mathematics. They're scholarly journals that you can search electronically in the library. Sometimes in the convenience of your own home when you're on the proprietary networks of the University of Waterloo and recognized as someone who's paid the site license. Would you please understand, ladies and gentlemen, that if you're going to build killer applications, you must be a researcher. And you must cross boundaries. You got to read in the business world, and if you don't understand the jargon, well, find an artsy to talk to. It's not that stressful a possibility. talk to Larry C. Croft. Find out. You need some technical information in that? Well, then go search for it. You need some technical information engineering? Go search for it. Now you're scoping out your problem. Low speed opportunity. Where's the biggest error? Where's the biggest weakness? Who needs this most? Who's stupidest? Most people are stupid about mathematics, so that hardly restricts you. Who's stupid about something involving mathematics that is bleeding them of money? Ah, that shrinks it. So you find it. So you do electronic search, do the media thing, you use electronic search, and then you do the other thing that everyone I talk to about you raves at. And I do not mean happy raving. I mean cursing and swearing. There are times where, when somebody in the business world knows that I teach at UW, I must honestly say their reaction is a little stressful to me. Now, please understand, I do think I owe you some loyalty. Your tuition, a small amount, has paid me money over enough years that I have a sense of loyalty to this place, as I view you in some sense as my production. I'm strong territorial parent, okay, so live with it. So I defend you. Even when occasionally I'm thinking, oh my God, God will get me for saying these things which I half know are half not quite true. And the thing they bitch about almost to the incessant degree, it's a simple fact of the matter, apparently you don't like talking to other human beings. Look, if you want to do killer applications, you've got to cross boundaries. Yes, you can read yourself across boundaries, but that will take you only so far. And you and your housemates, who have all basically the same education and orientation, unless you've got a really interesting house, this reading, this background research will only take you so far. You go talk to people. You talk to profs. You talk to your classmates. You talk to people outside your faculty. You talk. You talk till you drop. What is wrong with you? This is not talking thing. Oh, look, now you're all so silent, you wouldn't even talk back to me. I mean, for goodness sakes, a week ago, I have a senior CEO who's like freaking out. He's got someone in his office. You know, a well-educated person, young, with your general background. This is a company, big deal company, they've hired what they think is top talent. And they gave you responsibility. That's even like better. That's what you are. Well, young, responsibility is good. Here's a client file. You now manage it. Goody. And of course, you make a mistake. You make a mistake, and the client makes half a mistake, and now this whole client file is going sour. You can just feel like, hey, you and your career down. You've been there like 3 months. Good. Oh, the first thing they gave me, I'm now screwing up big time. And I'm sure the client is going to now call the CEO and say, I'm out of here. You tricky as you with a whole string of obscenity. So what to do, what to do? And you struggle away, and then finally you go to your mentor and say, help, help, I don't know what's wrong. So he reviews what you're doing. You say, I'm trying to fix it. I've been fixing it. We've actually fixed them with the client. Still mad as hell. We can't get the client to calm down. I fixed it. I fixed it as best I can. Yes, I know I made a bit of a mistake, but the client also wasn't paying attention. We could have fixed it faster. Now I have fixed it. And still, the client is there. It's some of the bitching. Right? I don't know what to do. Help, 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 help. So, the mentor says to the young dude, Okay, I mean, the guy's mad, so fine. Clients get mad. We certainly don't want to lose this big client. So tell me exactly what he said when you were talking to him. You know what the next... You should know. Why is the CEO now shouting at me? Was that somehow my fault? Because when he said, so what did the client tell you when you were talking to him? We got a client file going damn sour, and you still haven't talked to the person. You know, in real time. No, I didn't even pick up the damn phone. It's no telephone. Telephones, they do things because I take pictures. Well, I'm sorry. Like, it's ridiculous. It was, like, the guy's freaking out because it's the most logical, stupid thing to do. Someone's mad at you. So, the mentor said, well, for God's sake, you got to phone in at once. And he was, like, actually Now, the mentor, before, who was very supportive, is now like on the edge of Shelley. Phone him. Now. Well, what I was saying, because I told him everything in the email. I told him it was fixed. I told him we were sorry. I told him it's barely going to cost you any money, and we might even absorb that little cost. I told him all this. What else? I don't know what else to say. The sound of the human voice might soothe him down. Speak to him. You young, naive idiot, making me wonder why I hired you in the first place. As the CEO said to me, look, his technical talent was excellent. Yes, he made a little goof, but it was a totally, understandable small mistake as he was getting used to his responsibilities. So the CEO got even slightly agitated about the little error that set this off. He's severely irritated. But one thing, this person has no personal skills at all. And somehow, whether it's a graduate who somehow, and by the way, a co-op graduate, how should he get through his education without apparently understanding there's some issues you talk about and other issues you don't talk about? Email is not how you resolve big deal problems. It's not how you extract high-quality commercial information. The best of the University of Waterloo students know that. Do you really think I answer email questions about complex technologies, new markets, or corporate practice? How could I? How could I? A real answer is a dialogue. A real answer can't be a paragraph. If you think I'm doing more than a paragraph, what are you thinking? So I know what you do. Some of you do. Only because some of your faces are recognizable. You find me. You find me. You get in my face. And then, probably because you know me from somewhere, you might not get in someone else's face, but you get my face. And you get my face, you feel comfortable doing it because, after all, you know it turns me on. So you poke a little button at me, and I battle at you because you know perfectly well I can't stop. Fair enough. Okay, I add your, what you see is what you get. So that's okay, and I don't mind doing that. But you gotta find me. A single person sends me an email after this presentation, I will send you to... And don't doubt that I can find a worm that has sucked the life out of you and every piece of electronic device you have on the planet. In fact, I'll have your whole family disappear off the planet if you mess with me, so don't do that. Don't doubt that I could arrange that. I'm sure all the CS classes are so long for nothing. But the point, of course, is you extract information from real people. It's okay, some of you know me. Well, that's fine. So what's the problem with talking to a stranger? What, they're going to shoot you? Sorry, come on, this is Canada. Understand, if you ask a question of someone whose answer you're going to trust, you're asking a question for a man or a woman about the thing they know. So that's why you know you're going to get an answer out of me, because you're picking the things that get me all agitated and I battle about. I battle with the things I love. Don't discuss the frozen fisheries in Newfoundland with me. I have nothing to say. I will say, too busy, goodbye. But that's the point. If you find the right person to talk to, you talk to someone who's an expert in something. And 9 times out of 10, the expert in something loves to talk about the something. And if it's an obscure something, frequently, you won't be able to shut the person up. Because so few people ever discuss this obscure something with him. 20 years he's been waiting for somebody to ask him a question. Beyond that, they have to. Someone who just seems interested in the thing. Like the commerce student who got this ferocious lecture on the misapplication of mathematics in this other application. Then I was like, that sticking money into, here's money, hold out your hand, money, in effect. So, you ask people about things they love, having identified the persons who love them. And last, and certainly not least, you play to maximum advantage this card. If you only knew how useful it was, you still don't play it, or some of you play it sort of poorly. You want information, from some strange expert person, senior executive. And I watch you do this, by the way. I'm not giving you hypothetical advice. I have watched you get yourself in the faces, and I mean in the face, in real time, real place, not underneath that email. You try to reach any CEO of North America by email, you're lunatic. But I mean, get in their face. And they talk at you, and I watch this happen. For this ridiculously simple reason. You play your youth card. I am young. And I am doing. But I have a lot of potential. You possibly. I would like to be like you. Now you tell me someone who's going to say, get out of my face, you stupid person. You just said that I am your model. See, I'm not quite sure why you're laughing. Because if you're laughing because you think I made a joke, the joke is actually on you. That's how you do it. It works amazingly well. So giggle about my strange ideas. Some people in this room are doing it. Some people on this campus are doing it. Some of them can barely log on. And you work for them. If they do the talking. And you do not. And don't tell me you're shy. Because I don't care. Get over it. Oh, you can't announce to me that you can't function in today's world. And I say, well, we'll make an exception for you if you're shy. The marketplace doesn't care if you're shy. So don't tell me you can't count either. But you want to find a place in the world. These are essential skills. Not shy is a skill you teach yourself. I came from a community of 1,200 people. One class, 1 year. What I do now. And once upon a time, I was shyer than you, than anybody in this room. A social circle this big. Look at me. Somewhere along the line, I figured, who cares? Well, look at me, look at me. Think I'm weird, that's fine. Think you got a funny high-pitched voice than I do, fine. I don't care. I mean, this is me. This is me. My voice is wired for shrieky kind of thing. I can't help it because I'm trying to talk fast.
And if I wish to talk more slowly, I could.
But then I'd have to slow down and it drives me nuts and I have too much to say. You look so dopey and so...